When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. There he goes again. President Joe Biden with more of the same old class warfare, untruths on the campaign trail. You know what? A falling tide will sink all boats. That's his motto. Our very own Sandra Smith and Art Laffer and Kevin Brady will fact check Biden's latest tax hike. Plus, the Mayorkas articles of impeachment finally get over to the Senate floor. But will Chuck Schumer do his job and hold a trial? Meanwhile, Senator Rand Paul going to give us the latest on all of that. Plus, over on the House side, looks like the whole Israel-Ukraine foreign aid story in big trouble, unraveling as we speak. But we have Congressman Kevin Hern. He's going to try to tell us what's actually going on. And then Steve Hilton, Molly Hemingway, why voters are nostalgic for the good old Trump years. And can Donald Trump get a fair trial in far left New York? Paying hush money is a crime? I don't know. We'll ask Trump attorney Will Scharf. Anyway, our own Edward Lawrence, he's got the details on Joe Biden's latest economic pitch in Pennsylvania and maybe that Mayorkas impeachment. Yeah. What do you got, Edward?
Yeah, and let's start with that, Larry. Let's start with the impeachment. This could be the first cabinet person in President Biden's cabinet to be removed from office. The impeachment articles officially went over to the Senate today, and you can see the managers there. These are the managers from the House side that are carrying those impeachment articles. Marjorie Taylor Greene is there. Andy Biggs is there, along with the chairman, the impeachment manager, chairman, Homeland Security Committee Chairman Mark Green, Foreign Affairs Committee Michael McCaul, all walking this document in. About 2:20 this afternoon Eastern time is when the Mark Green, the chairman of the Homeland Security Commission, started reading the articles of impeachment. The managers basically stood behind him as he read that in the well. In the room there, senators, some were reading along. There was a lot of decorum. There was nothing out of decorum. Some were reading along. Some were watching the manager speak there. Now, President Joe Biden, for his part, is in a campaign event right now in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He's got two of them. He just finished one. He's going to go on to a second one. He's going to pitch his own tax plan and how that differs from former President Donald Trump. He also unveiled a new campaign line describing the former president as out of touch.
People like Donald Trump learned very different lessons. He learned the best way to get rich is inherited. Not a bad way. He learned that paying taxes was something people who work for a living did, not him. You learn that telling people you're fired was something to laugh about.
So the president arguing that the tax cuts under former President Trump helped only the rich. However, the latest polling shows 61% of adults say the national economy is fairly bad or very bad. 35% say it's fairly or very good, with only 4% not sure. The economy, the economic messaging from the Biden campaign is that President Biden inherited an economy in shambles because of the COVID pandemic. The president says that he fixed it. Now, critics say that fix has sparked inflation and all prices remain still 19% higher than the day President Biden came into office.
That's the biggest issue in this campaign right now, is the prices that people are paying at the grocery store, at the gas pump, for their health insurance, for all these things. And those prices are up, you know, substantially, 22 to 25%. And it's almost like inflation is a sales tax every time you go to the store. And people who make less than $400,000 are getting hammered by that.
Now, President Joe Biden desperately trying to re-message this economy so people feel better. The president going on these campaign rallies today and tomorrow. He has an official event in Pennsylvania while former President Trump stuck in court in New York City. Back to you.
All right, Edward Lawrence, thank you very much for that rundown. We appreciate it. All right, a couple comments from me. Every time Joe Biden says something about tax policy, I have to go back and write another riff to rebut all of his falsehoods. I'm so tired of this game. Today in Scranton, Biden put out yet another phony tax talking point paper with untruth after untruth. It's pure class warfare. Millionaires are bad. Billionaires are worse. And if somebody makes $1 million, some middle or lower income family loses $1 million. But that's not how our capitalist economy works. It is not a zero-sum game. As the late Congressman Jack Kemp said many years ago, in fact, borrowing from President John F. Kennedy, a rising tide lifts all boats. Incentives matter. If you encourage work and investment with lower tax rates, you will get more work and investment. As Art Laffer has said thousands of times, tax something less, you get more of it. Tax something more, you'll get less of it. Economic returns after tax and after inflation matter for individual or business economic decisions. So Biden's latest so-called tax fact sheet is just so utterly, completely wrong factually. I mean, it's okay to have your own opinion about how the world works, but it's not okay to make up your own factoids. So this whole Biden diatribe against Donald Trump's 2017 tax cuts is completely wrong. I just put out a few facts because I've done this so many times and it's such a wearying exercise. But here it goes. For the entire Trump term, real weekly earnings for typical working class families went up 9.2%. That is for the entire Trump term. So far, under Joe Biden, 3 years plus, they've actually fallen 4.5%. That's middle class wages. The biggest gainers from the Trump tax cuts were the middle and lower income earners, the bottom quintiles. In fact, the lowest 20% had the biggest gain. Then poverty dropped all the way down to a record low of 7.8% under Trump. Under Biden so far, poverty is 12.4% of the workforce. Unemployment for blacks, for Hispanics, Asians, and women dropped to record lows under Trump. A recent NBER study showed worker wages were the biggest beneficiary of the Trump tax cuts, and revenues over a few years actually broke even. Biden is blathering on that corporations don't pay taxes, only the wealthy benefited. The deficit expanded over $5 trillion and on and on and on. None of it is factually true. By the way, no administration has given out so many tax credits and subsidies through the tax code than the Biden's Green New Deal misnamed Inflation Reduction Act, which has kept the budget deficit at around $2 trillion as far as the eye can see, and one of the greatest corporate welfare slush funds in history. And incidentally, wealthy people living in the cities and suburbs on the East and West Coasts screamed like stuck pigs when Trump lowered the SALT tax deduction to only $10,000. And that's why the percentage income gains for the middle and lower were better than for the upper end. Meanwhile, Joe Biden wants to roll back all of the Trump tax cuts and institute various wealth taxes on unrealized capital gains and other asset confiscation that probably will come to about a $5 trillion tax hike. Mr. Biden is still spending at a rate of 24% of GDP or more, with additional massive spending plans if he ever gets reelected. The inflation rate has gone up 19.4% since Biden took office, and personal borrowing costs have skyrocketed. Another recent NBER paper suggests the actual inflation rate could now be 7%, borrowing costs included. But all these numbers aside, just think of it this way. Donald Trump cut taxes and the entire economy benefited. The bottom 20% benefited the most. But a rising tide lifted all boats. Today, the day after tax day, Joe Biden is out there someplace in middle America boasting how much he will raise taxes. That means a falling tide will sink all boats. What a loser's message. But I'm sure this is not the last time I'm going to have to write this article. All right, that's my turn. Joining me now, the great Sandra Smith, co-anchor of America Reports. And somewhere out there, we have our friend Kevin Brady, former Texas congressman. And we have Art Laffer, former Reagan economist. Everybody, boys and girls, welcome back.
Hey, Larry.
Arthur, I'm going to start with you because you taught me everything I know about taxes. I mean, for God's sakes, put away, you know what, every single detail. Trump cut taxes, rising tide lifted all boats. All Biden does is want to raise taxes. And I'm going to say a falling tide is going to sink all boats. Okay? I like it nice and simple. Go ahead, Art. Take it and run.
Well, you're totally correct. I mean, Trump did cut them, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, you know, reduce the corporate rate, I think, from 35 to 21, reduce the personal income from 39.6 to 37. There were lots of other things in there. And what happened, as you said, the lowest unemployment rates, the poor, the minority, the disenfranchised, the undereducated. I mean, all of that went to the lowest unemployment rates. Poverty went down and tax revenues went up. You didn't mention in your riff that another huge beneficiary of the Trump tax cuts was the increase in revenues for government. And that's just federal government. Their tax revenues went up as a result of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. But look at what it did to state and local taxes as well. They were raised as well. So they really benefited from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act dramatically. Now, what we also know, Larry, is whenever we've raised the highest marginal income tax rate in America on the rich, this is the Biden plan, whenever we've done that, literally whenever, from the beginning of the tax codes on, tax revenues from the rich have gone down, the economy has underperformed, and the poor have been hammered. When we've lowered tax rates, tax revenues have gone up from the rich, and also the economy has prospered, and the poor did well. Those are the facts, just the facts. And frankly, I'm very sick of people using the phrase, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's not about opinions, Larry. It's about facts.
No,
facts
right.
matter.
I know. You can make it. I don't care what your point of view is. You can't make up the facts. Sandra Smith, we're coming to you. Hang on one
That's
second.
Correct.
We're saving the best for last. I want to go and talk to my friend Kevin Brady. Kevin, you helped write the Trump tax cuts. I'm just going to say that Biden's assault is just factually untruthful. Now, I know, Kevin, presidents never lie, but they do tell untruths. And this from top to bottom is untrue. Is it not?
Absolutely, Larry, it is. And by the way, it's great to be on with tax legends who were mentors to me, as well as we crafted this bill. So the president's claims have been debunked so often that fact checkers have now come up with a new name for them, zombie claims. They're dead, they're not alive, but they keep walking into these press conferences. And it's such a shame because, you know, the Trump tax cuts delivered prosperity and fairness in a big way. In 2019 is my favorite year because we got to see how the tax cuts would drive the economy and families. And in that one year, we saw household income grow more in one year than in all 8 years under President Biden or President Obama and Vice President Biden. We saw poverty, as you said, hit 50 years low, especially for people of color, and income inequality began to shrink for the first time in half a century. And we did that not by sending them government checks, but by allowing them to keep more of their own paycheck, to invest in their own small business, in their own American dreams. And that's why President Trump's numbers, polling numbers, are so strong on the economy.
Sandra Smith, a day after tax day, Biden's going to Scranton, Pennsylvania, to raise taxes. And blame Trump. He always blames Trump. So I want to get your take on this. You're a person of middle America, sort of.
Well, first of all, I'm very honored to be with you, all of you tax legends out there. But absolutely, he delivered this speech. It was live during our hours today, during America Reports. There he stood in Scranton, Pennsylvania, telling voters there that he's doing a great job on the economy and that he's going to make things better for them. Inflation in that state is running at 17%. Okay, he is not getting good marks on the economy from voters there. If you live in that state, you are paying $888 more a month under this president than you were before Biden took office. The average price for a gallon of gasoline is sitting at $3.73 in Pennsylvania, up a buck under Joe Biden. Okay, so where do you run? Where do you hide? It's to your affordability crisis situation happening in so many states in this country. House prices, it's incredibly expensive to buy a home in Pennsylvania. They're up 31%. 1%. You know, I think I said this to you right before the show started, but, you know, the ultimate tax is inflation, right? People are paying more for absolutely everything out there. And then you have the president, while he's telling everybody everything's okay and going to get better under him, he's transferring student debt. And that all is going to get transferred to the American taxpayer. And let's not forget, when you have him touting these tax hikes, that the basic tenet there is that the government knows how to spend your hard-earned dollars better than you.
Well put. No, that's right.
Let's not forget that.
That cuts right through it. So who's going to pay for the canceled student debt?
The hard-working American that likely did not or never will go to college.
About 65% will pay for the 35%. How's that fair?
Amen.
How's that fair?
It doesn't fare well. And in an election year, people will remember that.
Just think about what you just said. That the government can spend your money more than you can. He's out there saying to people, I'm going to raise taxes by about $5 trillion. We're going to reverse all the Trump tax cuts, which, by the way, people approve of. We just saw the New York Times poll shows people thought they did better under Trump than under Biden. I'm going to raise your taxes and spend more money. How is that going to give you confidence about the economic future and economic opportunity? That's the part
people
I don't
People are understand. Not optimistic, and they're taking on more and more credit card debt to pay for these sky-high prices. You know, credit card debt's up nearly 50% under this presidency. And a brand-new Reuters Ipsos poll just came out, I think this was in the last hour or so. It showed that Trump is over Biden 41% to 34% on who voters think best to handle this economy. So he's still getting the higher marks. And by the way, when I was listening to Biden, I only got to listen to half the speech, so I could be wrong. I did not hear the president utter the word Bidenomics.
No,
they seem to be running far from that these days. So.
Kevin Brady, he forgot to mention Bidenomics. And while we're at it, Kevin Brady, I want you to, if there's a Trump tax cuts 2.0, can we flatten the rates and simplify the code again? Can we move in the same direction? Drop the corporate rate down maybe to 15% where Mr. Trump wanted it in the first place? I mean, what should we do with the code? You were one of the authors of the landmark bill.
Yes, I would say the answer is make it more simple and flatter, fairer, and even more pro-growth because there's more there to be had. And so one thing to point out, the corporate, as you know, with your leadership and the president, you know, we lowered it to 21%. The federal government's actually generating more revenue at 21%. Than it did at 35%. Businesses are investing in their workers, their community, in America especially. We've seen a huge sort of a giant sucking sound back into the United States of investment, manufacturing, even patents here along with the research. And so I would go for first lock in these low rates that we have today. They're incredibly fair and it's pro-growth for businesses. Secondly, you know, I would continue to try to drive rates down as low as we can, especially on investment. I'll tell you, one of the things we didn't get done is we weren't able to lower the capital gains rate and spur even more investment. I think that's always important because we don't want, right now we have an economy driven by consumer spending, government spending. It's not sustainable. And certainly I think we can make even more progress in the pro-growth area going forward.
I'd laugh for just to, you know, look, if you want to have a socialist, big government, high taxes, fine. But Art, in its simplest way, I mean, what Sandra was saying, you either cut taxes or you raise taxes. Since when would a $5 trillion tax hike help an economy? Okay, since when? And Arthur, you always say, after tax income drives work and investment. If that income shrinks, you're not going to do it. If that income expands, you will do it. Tax something more, you get less of it. Tax something less, you get more of it. These are fundamental truths. Why can't the Bidens understand this?
Well, I don't know, Larry, but let me just put it really straightforwardly. I have never yet heard of an economy taxed into prosperity.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense whatsoever. And then you look at what Biden's solution is, Larry, which is welfare spending and more transfer payments and all of that. And once again, I've never heard of a poor person spending himself into wealth. Mm. These two are just the two silliest things I've ever. If you tax people who work and you pay people who don't work, don't be surprised if you got to get a lot less people working. And that's exactly where we are today. And it's a shame because we have the potential to be really productive and really fair and really balanced and really to help the poor, the minorities, and the disenfranchised. And we're frittering it away with these Biden policies. But it's simple. It's just really straightforward and simple.
Sandra. A rising tide lifts all boats.
Amen.
This is what Mr. Biden doesn't understand. And ironically, 30 years ago more, in 1986, Joe Biden voted for the Reagan second tranche, which brought the top rate to 28 and the only other rate to 15. That's what John F. Kennedy taught everybody. That's what Reagan and Kem taught. They don't get it.
I can only imagine. Well, maybe you guys should spell that out more. What would the growth look like with a 15% corporate tax rate?
5%.
But rising tide lifts all. But I thought of you because I was clipping a montage of Biden recently. And I know you love when he says the American economy, it needs to grow from the middle out and the bottom up.
It's my favorite.
Not the top down.
I don't even know what it means. It's my favorite.
Sideways.
Line. It's sideways. I'm sorry. But today is accusing Trump of inheriting his money. So why do you want to take all of his
money? By the way, one thing not to forget, the Wall Street Journal pointed this out this morning, the editorial board. The IRS's most wanted man, the $200,000 man, the IRS is targeting those making $200,000
less
with audits more than any other group.
Yep.
I mean, how about them?
Uber drivers, waitresses.
Brutal.
Thank you, Sandra Smith.
Thanks
appreciate it.
Me.
Thank you, Kevin Brady. It's great to see you. Thank you, Arthur
Good
Laffer.
To see you.
We appreciate it very much. All right, folks, don't forget you can catch Sandra along with her co-anchor, John Roberts, on America Reports. Weekdays every day, 1 p.m. Eastern on Fox News.
Thank you, Larry.
Coming up here on Kudlow, Mike Johnson's Israel-Ukraine foreign aid packages. Well, it's kind of blowing up, folks. We have Congressman Kevin Hearns going to try to tell us what happens next. We're all waiting with bated breath. I don't know. Let's go back to the border. Close the border. That's what I want to do. I'm Kudlow. She's Sandra Smith. We'll be right back.
Greatest of all time. That's quite a label. It's one thing to be called great, it's another to be called the greatest. How do we compare athletes or writers or scientists from one generation to another? Serena Williams to Steffi Graf, Johnny Unitas to Tom Brady, Roger Federer to Rod Laver. Jim Gray has had an amazing career talking to some of the most successful and influential people of our lifetime. So who better to talk to about the GOATs, the greatest of all time, than the author of Talking to Goats, legendary sports commentator Jim Gray. Thank you so much, Mr. Gray, for joining us. So how do we find the best ever when oftentimes these men and women did not compete against one another?
Well, it's very subjective, Trey, and thanks for having me on. So one man's GOAT can be somebody else's second, third, or fifth place, and maybe not even on the list. But it gets very difficult to pick just exactly who is the GOAT because, you know, there are different times and different eras, but I would say this without equivocation. Muhammad Ali is the GOAT. He invented the name, he wrote the book, GOAT, and he was the greatest of all time, and he used to say greatest of all times. So I'll go with Ali.
All right. I want to ask you, I was looking at some of the people you've interviewed over the, and it's not just sports figures. I mean, it's like the top people in their field, regardless of what their field is. What are some of the similarities you have found in people who are at the top of their field?
They're myopic. They will stop at literally nothing to continue to be great. And they will touch perfection once, and they'll want to do it over and over and over again, and they get tormented by it. Whether it's Michael Jordan, whether it's Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, they touch it for a moment, but it's like a jellyfish tray. It slips right out of their hands, but they got to do it again and again and again, and they're driven to do it. Once is not enough. Sometimes five, and in Brady's case, seven times is not enough. So that's what I would say, is that their pursuit for excellence is insurmountable, and they, even when they do surmount it, they want more.
Who would you like to talk to that you have not had a chance to talk to yet? Because it's an amazing list that you've talked to. Who's someone you haven't talked to but you're dying to?
Well, they're probably not with us anymore. I would have liked to have talked to Babe Ruth and Vince Lombardi, Jesse Owens, Jackie Robinson. I got to talk to Nelson Mandela, and he was the most remarkable man that I met and was able to interview and speak to. I would say probably alive today, maybe the Pope and maybe President Xi, because you'd like to know what their thoughts are on world peace and just exactly, you know, what they might do to procure that.
All right, let me ask you a selfish question, because you've managed to get people to agree to an interview. I have trouble getting my wife to agree to talk to me sometimes. You have gotten the most influential people in the world. How do you do it?
Well, it's probably, I don't know, just keep trying. I mean, you get a lot of no's, but you keep throwing pitches, and some are strikes, some are balls, but you just keep going after it. And, you know, probably the same hard work, diligence, and just wanting to get to that person, and, you know, eventually it happens. And sometimes it just takes one more time, and you have to have a real thick skin. And rejection isn't bad. Getting no sometimes is a good answer, but then it makes you work harder, so you just keep going.
If you're in Israel, thanks for watching Fox on CELCOM. For the latest headlines, check out foxbusiness.com and foxnews.com.
Nobody.
The consumer is strong. The balance sheets are strong.
Brings you America's business news.
There's so much going on.
And what it means for you.
We want to get some breaking news to you right now. Fox Business Alert.
Like Fox Business. Keeping you ahead of the curve.
All the insider selling by some of the richest people on earth.
With insight into the impact of U.S. and global markets.
That's where the recipe for inflation comes
from. The people you can trust.
Let's have some fun with this.
Fox Business. America's Business Network.
All right, according to reports, an Israeli counterattack on Iran may be imminent. Fox News' Jeff Paul is live in Tel Aviv with all the details. Jeff, thank you. What can you tell us?
Well, yeah, Larry, we know the Israeli war cabinet that was supposed to meet yet again today, like they have over the past couple of days, to discuss their next moves in terms of a response to the Iranian attack. But we're also seeing some reports that meeting might have been canceled and postponed for tomorrow. But regardless of what happens tonight, it really speaks to how fragile the situation is as Israel tries to figure out its next move. We're also seeing new images provided in part by the IDF regarding some of the leftover materials from that Iranian attack. You're looking at this is a fuel tank spanning 36 feet long, coming from just one of the estimated 110 ballistic missiles fired from Iran. The IDF says it was retrieved from the Dead Sea, and had their air defense system not been so accurate in intercepting 99% of the drones and missiles fired, the aftermath could have been far more devastating. And that's a big part of the reason why there is this push to have some sort of response to Iran. But Israel acknowledges it must be strategic and something that won't lead to a wider conflict.
There's always a fear of escalation, but we are not looking for escalation. We are looking to make sure that Iran doesn't do this. We can't be allowed to live under the threat of these ballistic missiles. That's unacceptable. No one would accept that.
Now, on top of the situation with Iran, Israel still has its ongoing war in Gaza. And now today we are seeing there is some rising tensions in the north part of Israel. There was a bit of an exchange between Hezbollah, Lebanon's Hezbollah, and the IDF, which ended, according to Israel, with two commanders within Hezbollah being killed. Larry.
All right. Jeff Paul, thank you for that. Please be safe. We'll talk soon. All right, folks, switching gears, coming back home. Speaker Mike Johnson's foreign aid package has essentially blown up, what we're reporting. Let's bring in Oklahoma Congressman Kevin Hearn, who's the chairman of the Republican Study Committee. Kevin, thank you very much. So this thing's the four pieces, Israel, Ukraine, Taiwan, Far East, and various funding devices, has basically fallen apart from what I'm told by various insiders. What can you tell us?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. And we look at what Iran has just done with Israel. It's no wonder with Joe Biden being, you know, telling Israel to stand down, that we can't support you. It's time not to, you know, quit going into Gaza. Iran saw an opportunity. It's been, you know, continuing since August of 2021. This president has shown weak leadership abroad. Yes, he's responded after the fact, but that's why you're getting Iran doing what they're doing, and Israel's going to respond appropriately. When you see the package that we're working on right now, we're voting right now for some support bills that will lead up to the funding package, but it's to send the message that Republicans in Congress support Israel. The Democrats do not, and that's what we're going to see. There are going to be a handful of Democrats that will support the bills, maybe. When you look at the packaging of itself, the funding package you just referenced, the real problem for all of us is the Ukrainian part. While I know that Ukraine is in the middle of a war and what's going on there is a travesty, the American people, the American voters that put all of us up here are saying, why are you more concerned about Ukrainian's border after you've already sent $120 billion and you're not concerned about our southern border? So that's really kind of what blew up the package. Probably that's really the center of everything.
Yeah, and Kevin, so I got to tell you, I think what Americans are worried about is the southern border. Israel, look, I support Israel wholeheartedly. Israel is funded. You want to give them a couple more dollars, fine. But to me, it's the border. It's the crime. It's the police deaths. It's the drugs. It's the sex problems. It's the cartels. It's the illegal. I mean, everything. I think it's the border. I mean, I know, you know, some advice is free. I think you all are going to focus on the border. Mayorkas impeachment going into the Senate, I think that's the biggest event today, to be honest with you. Maybe Schumer's going to bury it, but I think that is the single biggest event today. That's what's going to catch everybody on the headlines tonight, Kevin. Believe me, it's the border and why they have not enforced the border.
Well, and that's what you heard from all the members yesterday in conference, today in conference. That's why the bills have been put on pause until we can find a way forward, because they're not going to get votes for Ukraine in this package until the border is secure. And there are a lot of Republicans like myself that are pushing that in order to get the funding of this package moving forward. And the speaker knows that, and the speaker's trying to figure out a way forward right now. And it's really what the American people want. As you said, there are 9,000 to 10,000 people a month dying from fentanyl alone. Plus the millions that have come into this country wanting to hurt us.
It's crazy. All right, Kevin Hart, we appreciate your update. Good luck on the negotiations.
Thanks,
we'll figure it out. All right, folks, coming up, impeachment articles against DHS Secretary Mayorkas head to the Senate. We're going to talk to Senator Rand Paul about that whole story next. I mean, the Senate may be completely handicapped and business is going to stop because Schumer doesn't want to deal with the Mayorkas and Schumer doesn't want to deal with the border. Democrats don't want to deal with the border. Biden doesn't want to deal with the border. The border right now is everything. Anyway, Senator Rand Paul, I'm Kudlow. I'll still be here, too.
Mornings with Maria on Fox Business.
Every morning, I want to empower my viewers to move their families forward and seize the day.
All the news that drives the markets and beyond. Mornings with Maria on Fox Business. Invested in you.
This may seem like a bad day for these bighorn sheep, but they're going to a new home that is not only safe from predators, but a place where they'll be able to help prop up the bighorn population in Utah.
So we've got it's between 1,000 and 2,000 acre ranch with a high fence around the whole thing. And so we're gonna turn them loose there, see how they do. Hopefully we can get up to around 150 sheep in there total before we start moving them.
Derek Ewell is a wildlife biologist with the Utah Division of Wildlife. He's among the dozens of people taking part in the operation. This year, 30 bighorn sheep, 4 rams, 26 ewes and lambs are being processed for relocation. The operation begins with a capture using a helicopter and a net gun.
They'll locate sheep, they'll net gun them, and their mugger jumps out and he hobbles them, secures them in the bag.
The chopper then brings them back for processing, where staff and volunteers examine the animals, take blood and other samples, and look at their overall health.
Utah will take those animals, a clean source herd, put them in a unhunted population, and use those animals as sources for translocations within Utah.
The bighorn sheep of the Valley of Fire are the choice sheep because they appear to be free of a respiratory issue that plagues some of the other populations in southern Nevada, a disease that is easily spread from contact with infected sheep. The operation is a win-win for both Utah and Nevada, according to Wood.
Benefits us to sort of reduce that population in a natural way, and it benefits Utah for them to have a good, clean source herd of healthy animals.
The captured bighorn sheep will be driven to Utah and will be released at the enclosed Sky Rider Wilderness Ranch once they get a clean bill of health, which takes about 24 hours. This is the first time this operation is taking place, but it's not the last. Utah wants more bighorn sheep, and Nevada is planning to accommodate.
I think our goal is to do this at least two more years so we can get, you know, 30 next year and 30 the following year is our goal.
Les Griffin, Fox 5 News, local Las Vegas.
I want you to tell me about your Pinot Noir project. I'm told you are planting 500 acres? That's enormous.
It is enormous. With the Brown family, a really great farming family in Washington State, in the Ainchi Lake area in Frenchman Hills, we planted 500 acres of Pinot Noir simply because it made sense. This is a place where Pinot Noir should be. And so,
why Pinot Noir? Is there an expanding market for it?
It is, because the thing is, it is exactly the same latitude. You have the great wines of France are at the same latitude as we are at 47 degrees. And then it's also, the soils are limestone. We're in continental climate. So you check a lot of boxes. Right. This seems like this would be the perfect place to plant Pinot Noir. I mean, think about the 1960s when David Lett decided, I'm going to plant Pinot Noir in Oregon. And everybody goes, you're crazy. But now he's the grandfather, the godfather, if you will, of Oregon wine. And everybody thinks he was a genius. So
I talked to my son this morning. He's in Australia.
Right.
Varney Wines, and he's a winemaker. And he said, ask Charles about growing wine in California. Because he says climate change is making California too hot to grow wine.
Well, I saw somebody sent me on their dashboard a screenshot of 115 degrees in Sonoma this summer. Grapes don't like to be 115 degrees. They don't grow in the desert. Now,
so is optimum wine growing going north through Oregon into Washington?
I think it's becoming much more viable, even more so than we've been for the last 30 years. Absolutely.
How many, I suppose you measure stuff in cases, don't you? How many cases of Pinot Noir can you extract from 500 acres eventually?
Well, we'll grow eventually to 150,000 cases of single vineyard Pinot Noir, which is unheard of. Sustainably farmed, native fermented, nothing but the grapes and the vessel they're resting in.
The Evening Edit with Elizabeth McDonald.
One of the biggest goals of the show is to look out for Americans. We pull back the curtain and show you what's really going on.
Elizabeth McDonald is breaking the biggest stories. The Evening Edit on Fox Business. Invested in you.
All right, the Mayorkas articles of impeachment finally reached the Senate floor. Question now, is there going to be a full trial? Joining us, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. Senator Paul, welcome back, sir. Tell us a little bit. Will Chuck Schumer allow this trial to take place, or are you and others going to shut down the Senate?
You know, I think what's going to happen is something unprecedented. We've never had the impeachment of a president or the impeachment of a cabinet member that is simply sent over and summarily dismissed with no discussion, no debate. What we're hearing is that Chuck Schumer is going to move to table, which means he would nullify the whole results without any trial. No trial, no discussion, no discussion or presentation of the charges. This has never happened in the history of the Senate. It's unprecedented, and I think it's a dereliction of duty. I don't think this is what the Constitution intended. When something serious happens, like an impeachment, there should be a trial.
I sure agree, and I think this is the most important issue facing the country right now. Senator Paul, is there something you can do about it? I mean, can you tie his hands? Can you tie the Senate's hands until Mr. Schumer gets back to the right constitutional path?
Yes, if the Senate Republicans had the guts, the stamina, the integrity, the wherewithal to stay together, 41 of us can stop anything in the Senate. In fact, 41 of us could have made them compromise on spending. But every time spending comes up, we capitulate. We're like, oh, no, they say it's going to be us shutting down the government, so we have to give the Democrats everything we want. No, we should say they're not doing their constitutional duty. So guess what? Nothing happens in the Senate. But see, already the next thing they have up after this is spying on Americans through FISA the way they spied on Trump. That comes up at the end of this week, and they're all freaking out. So instead of standing together and telling Schumer, you have to do the impeachment, they're all going to freak out and say, how quickly can we dispense of this? So some Republicans are secretly saying, let's get this done so we can do a whitewash on FISA and let them continue to have all the power in the world to spy on Americans. But I can tell you, I, for one, am not going to let them do this easily. And I am going to do everything I can to make sure there's a debate on FISA, because I don't think our intelligence agencies should be allowed to spy on Americans without a warrant.
Well, go, Rand, go. I mean, that's absolutely. But I'm hearing about spending bills, foreign assistance spending bills. And Senator Paul, I don't hear the word pay for. I'm trying to listen. I know I'm old, but my ears generally work. I just don't hear the word pay for.
Well, when Speaker Mike Johnson came in, his first act, I was excited. I said, well, this is a real deal. Maybe he's going to be a true conservative. He passed increased money, foreign aid for Israel, but he paid for it by clawing back IRS money. He actually had to pay for it. First time I've ever seen foreign aid paid for. And now he's negotiating with himself. He's going to put forward another Israel bill that's going to be unpaid for, which I'm frankly not going to support. I can't support aid even for our friends if it doesn't come from somewhere else in the budget, because we're bankrupting our country. But Mike Johnson now is going to negotiate with himself. Chuck Schumer says he won't accept it if it's paid for. So Mike Johnson's just going to wilt and say, oh, here's the Israel aid unpaid for, and here's the Ukraine aid unpaid for, and here's Taiwan aid unpaid for, and here's a whole bunch of other money that just puts us further into debt. But I think that the biggest risk our country has is not invasion from without, but it's the rot from within, from debt, and we have to do something. Our national security is threatened by this, so we need Mike Johnson to step up, and he needs to look and stare down Chuck Schumer and say, we've already passed Israel aid. You think Israel needs more aid? You've got it. It's on your desk. Pass it. But we're going to pay for it by reducing IRS spending.
Well, perhaps Mr. Johnson will come around to your liking. Last one, Senator Paul. This is the day after tax day. I know it's a great celebration in your household. Once upon a time, you were for a flat tax. I've got about 45 seconds to a minute. How about the flat tax, Senator Paul?
Absolutely. I love Steve Forbes' flat tax. I had a flat tax when I ran for president. And the thing is what we need to do is have a flat tax, but everybody needs to pay it like either weekly or monthly so they see it coming out of their check. No more withholding. We're going to see how bad and how awful it is and how upset Americans are if they have to pay their taxes every day, every month, and see their taxes up front instead of having them taken by their employer. Everybody has to see their taxes, and then there's going to be a tax revolt.
You know, that's what Dick Armey wanted years ago. Same idea. Everybody's got to see it. And that's where the pinch is. That's where the pain is. I just feel, you know, to me right now, I know there's a lot to talk about the border. The border is everything. And I just hope you all stay on the border. I hope you fight for this Mayorkas impeachment. I think it's really important.
Absolutely. And without question, we've got to take care of our border before we start trying to figure out the problems of other countries' borders.
Yes, sir. Senator Rand Paul, thank you, sir. We really appreciate it, as always. All right, folks, we're going to move right along. Let's talk politics. Oh, my gosh. We have Molly Hemingway, editor-in-chief of The Federalist, Fox News contributor. And we also, if that weren't amazing enough, Steve Hilton, also a Fox News contributor. Welcome to both of you. Molly, welcome back, by the way. New York Times poll looked like, I don't usually do polls, but this is a very interesting poll. New York Times poll looked like Biden was closing the gap. But when you go underneath the hood and you start asking people, do they remember good or bad? All of a sudden, Donald Trump wins every single category, okay? People without college degrees, 48 to 20. People with college degrees, 34 to 33. Men, 53 to 24. Women, 33 to 27. Young people, 18 to 29, by 33 to 8. They remember the Trump years as good. What do you make of that, Molly Hemingway?
Well, people remember that for them, the economy was great during the Trump years. Inflation was low. Throughout the Biden presidency, it's been above the historic average on inflation. They remember that they could afford to put gas in their cars. They could afford groceries, that mortgage rates were 2 to 3% versus the 7% they've been under Biden. And just objectively speaking, life was better for Americans, maybe not for the permanent D.C. class or the media, but for Americans across the board, secure border, dealing with crime, not having all of the money being spent to far-flung countries with conflicts, and in fact having peace breaking out throughout the world. So people remember that things were good, and they also know that things aren't great now.
Yeah, I've been arguing for the border, attention to the border. I think you're 100% right. Steve Hilton, Joe Biden's out on the campaign trail today in Scranton, Pennsylvania, basically arguing for a $5 trillion tax hike as the way to renovate the economy. You think that's a terrific idea? He's blaming Trump for everything, but he wants to raise taxes, undo the Trump tax cuts. The Trump tax cuts and lower taxes are the problem, Steve, not the solution.
It's just amazing, isn't it, that they never, ever learn. And these bad ideas just keep kind of walking around the political landscape like zombies of the left. We can see the impact of these tax increases. Just look at the state where I am, in California. We have the highest taxes in the country. What has that led to? Businesses leaving. So we now also have the highest unemployment in the country, the lowest job creation in the country, the lowest income growth in the country. I mean, these Democrats just love to expand the size and scope of government. That's all they live for. And that's why they have this insatiable appetite for more taxes. They always say, oh, it's only going to be the rich. But in the end, there aren't enough rich people to go around, as Margaret Thatcher famously said.
Yes, well, what is it people who stand in the middle get hit by cars going both ways? I always like that. Molly Hemingway, let me come back to you. You wrote the book on Zuckerbucks. You taught us all that that election was probably lost way before the actual voting. Molly, lately, as you probably know, President Biden is putting out executive orders and exhorting all of his bureaucrats in all these agencies, I don't care which agency, agriculture, justice, prisoners, HHS, go out there and register voters and harvest voters. And by the way, we will pay you for administrative leave while we do it. This is like a federal Zuckerbucks, Molly Hemingway. Scares me a lot.
Yeah, people call them Biden bucks, and it does come from an executive order that Biden issued shortly after he came into office. All these different agencies filed secret plans for how they would get involved in the election. And this is a problem. You know, we need to know that we can trust election outcomes. And we also kind of sense that if this were a free and fair election, you would be seeing a 1980-style blowout. Oh. But because of all of the ways that people are meddling with how we do elections and not caring about them being secure, people are worried about what the outcome will be, and they should be, because so much taxpayer funding is going to help out with get-out-the-vote operations on behalf of Democrat interest groups.
I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it's stupid. Whatever happened to the Hatch Act when I worked in government, you're not supposed to do any of that. I've never seen anything like it. Molly Hemingway, thank you. Steve Hilton, thank you. Time is always short, but we'll talk to you soon. Folks, coming up here on Kudlow, how long is it going to take to pick a jury in the Bragg case against Donald Trump? Oh, and by the way, Mr. Trump is scheduled to be out campaigning in the Bronx among bodegas, where I think he's going to pick up some endorsements. How about that? We'll ask Trump attorney Will Scharf when Kudlow returns.
For Israel, equal cash for Ukraine, as the White House pushes a huge foreign aid bill. Why one lawmaker says it doesn't add up. Corey Mills breaks down the numbers on the bottom line.
Hey, it's Nick Koser. I recently took a trip to LA to visit the set of So You Think You Can Dance. I wanted to see if I could keep up with the show's all-star dancers, and they were nice enough to share some moves with me. Take a look and see if you think I can dance.
What are you talking about?
Today, the idea is to make a cool dance challenge. I've got Comfort and Bailey here with me. You guys ready to do this?
Let's get it.
Before you guys teach me some choreo, okay, can you just show me what kind of moves you have?
All right. Okay. Okay. Hey.
Now that you guys saw my skills, do you think you can work with me?
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely?
Yes. Yeah.
All right, cool. All right. Give me like 10 more minutes. I think I pulled a hamstring. Dang, I forgot.
Ah!
Hey, remembering choreo is a pain in the Doppler radar. All right, guys, you've seen my moves. I think our choreo's tight. Are you guys ready to kill this dance challenge with me?
Absolutely. Indubitably.
You ready?
So excited.
Yo.
Let's go. Let's
say less. Say less. Let's do it.
Private, military, or corporate planes, aircraft mechanics are crucial for safe flights, but there's just not enough of them to go around right now. Some of the students at this school's program are hoping to fill that gap.
I kind of think of myself as an airplane doctor.
When I was younger, there was a program called Operation Purple, where they would send military kids to a summer camp for a week. Army National Guard came in one year, and they brought a Black Hawk helicopter, and little 8-year-old me, 9-year-old me was like, that's the coolest thing ever.
Ann Hagstrom and Justin Bosco love all kinds of aircraft. They're two of 12 students about to graduate from the Aviation Maintenance Technology Program at Southwestern Illinois College.
It's really interesting. Every day is different. The money you can't really complain with, especially with, you know, everyone retiring.
Those retirements are helping to drive the shortage of mechanics.
We had the baby boomer generation, and that's what filled the workforce, and now they're all retiring. So this is, you know, the next large wave, as it were. All the people now need to start filling in all the spots that are being vacated by people who are retiring or at that age.
A recent report expects the aviation industry to have a shortage of 12,000 to 18,000 technicians this year, and that number is projected to grow.
They don't have enough mechanics. They can't produce a certain amount of hours that, you know, inspections take, so they may have to down planes or extend planes maintenance activities longer.
Which could disrupt travel. But some commercial airlines like Delta don't anticipate issues. Delta says they're getting ahead of the shortage with a strong pipeline of workers through partnerships with schools and other recruiting efforts. In the meantime, these future mechanics are ready to get to work.
I'm glad that there's jobs available, but I really hope that a lot of people join us so that we don't end up with, like, having to work overtime and being stressed out.
Nearly one-third of the current aircraft mechanic workforce is at or near retirement. In Granite City, Illinois, Madison Scarpino, Fox News.
Hello to our friends watching in Costa Rica on Cable Tica. Thank you for choosing Fox. Keep it right here.
All right, Will Scharf is part of the Trump legal team, such as it is, and he is also a candidate for attorney general in the great state of Missouri. And last night we heard some very interesting things from Professor Alan Dershowitz of Harvard. Do we have the tape from Dershowitz? All right. Will Scharf, I'll just start with you. We'll drop in the Dershowitz tape in a minute. First of all, a lot of people want to know, I mean, this is New York after all. How long is it going to take to pick a jury?
You know, we could be in for a long wait, Larry. It's obviously New York, which is not a particularly favorable venue for us. But on top of that, you've had wall-to-wall media coverage, total media saturation, highly misleading narratives about both the facts and the law pushed by the media in this case. That's one of the reasons we moved to push this trial until after the election. It's one of the reasons we moved to change the venue But seating a jury is going to be a profound problem here. We need a fair and impartial jury. If we get a fair and impartial jury, President Trump will be acquitted. But that's going to be a challenge over the next couple of weeks.
All right. So here's what Professor Dershowitz said on the show last night. You'll enjoy this, Will. Take a listen.
Nobody in world history has ever been indicted for failing to disclose hush money. Why would anybody ever pay hush money if they had an obligation to disclose it? It's an oxymoron.
I guess, Will Sharp, I asked the same question. I'm not a lawyer. Why would anybody pay it to disclose it? It's an oxymoron. I don't understand anything about this trial except it's totally political and a two-tier justice system.
Yeah, well, look, this is not a hush money trial, and I'll take issue with what my former professor, Alan Dershowitz, said in that respect. This is a case about business records that were entered in New York while, by the way, President Trump was sitting in the White House running the country. The business records recorded payments to a lawyer as legal retainer payments. How that constitutes fraud, I have no idea. And then they're saying that the purpose of this supposed business records fraud was to cover up an election expense when federal election law is quite clear that the expenses in question weren't election expenses. So this whole case should have never been brought in the first place. But I think it's really important that we emphasize the point that this is a case about the accuracy of business records and not the alleged underlying hush money issue.
Okay, well, that's an important point. I'm glad you make it. By the way, it's reporting Mr. Trump is going to go out and do a little campaigning on the bodegas in Harlem, which is a terrific thing. He's going to do what he's got to do. They can't hold him down, Will Sharp. They can't keep a good man down. Last word, 5 seconds.
He is irrepressible. He has boundless energy. He's going to be our next president. And I don't think anything the radical left and Alvin Bragg can do will stop him from achieving that objective.
Will Sharp, thanks ever so much.
Kraft Heinz is facing a class action lawsuit that claims its Lunchables pre-packaged meal kits contain harmful metals. A company spokesperson telling TMZ its products are safe, saying certain substances like lead occur in the environment and can be found at low levels in agricultural products, whether on grocery store shelves, in the produce section, or grown in your backyard. A Consumer Reports study found the company was misleading customers about the safety of their product. Breakfast bagel sandwiches are coming back to McDonald's locations in California. It's part of the company's plan to offset the state's new $20 wage hike for fast food workers. McDonald's hopes that this will help boost store traffic. The breakfast bagel was first introduced in 1999. The company stopped serving it as a standalone item in 2020. And more car shoppers are deciding to buy a hybrid. The Wall Street Journal says the sales gap between hybrids and electric vehicles has been widening recently. Purchases of gas-electric hybrids started increasing last year. At the start of this year, about 180,000 more hybrids than EVs were sold. That's Business in New York. I'm CJ Papa.
Look at the nice hot fire here at the smokers at Killen's Barbecue down here in Pearland, Texas. The thing that's killing them these days is the price of beef. Ronnie Killen is arguably the king of Texas barbecue. What do you got that you're smoking right now, by the way?
We have a little pork ribs, and we have a little smoked prime rib. That's a ribeye roll. Uh-huh. And then we have some beef ribs and a little brisket and then a little turkey breast back here.
It's the beef, though, that's really the problem.
That's for sure. I mean, beef prices for the past 3 years have been kind of crazy, but, you know, now they're just kind of like at an all-time high. But for us, we just try to utilize every part of it and make stocks out of the bones and, you know,
being a little more efficient with the meat.
Efficient and creative and trying to be the best we can be so we can give a good, you know, cost per value for the guests.
The reason for the problem with the price of beef is, you know, herds have been reduced down here. You had a terrible drought in Texas.
It was terrible. I mean, 3 months, I mean, everything was dead. I mean, you know, the grass is dead. And it's like people, you know, farmers have to take and, you know, supplement, you know, feed and everything for the lack of grass. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, it's, and plus it was just so, you know, the heat and everything, how hot it is. I mean, it's you know, a lot of cattle die.
Before we get away here, and as we look maybe back at that, well, that's a great piece of beef right there. I don't know, maybe, Roger, that's, you can get a picture of that. That's a few dollars there.
It's expensive, but it's almost, brisket is almost more expensive. It's more expensive than that.
Yeah. Price is up, but people still seem to be eating.
Absolutely. We, you know, we're busier and busier, and, you know, I think it is because we haven't raised the prices where, you know, you can take a household and they can't eat out because it's just too expensive. We haven't priced ourselves out of that, you know, the market.
Yeah. Maybe autos and houses with the high interest rates, prices up, driving people out of the market. Not so much at the barbecue plate. I'm Jeff Locke with the Fox Business Network in Pearland, Texas.
When news breaks.
And we begin with this Fox News alert.
America turns to Fox News Channel.
We are feeling the impact all across the country.
Stream it now on the Fox News International app. It's the place for top political coverage.
It's a very big day here at the White House.
With must-see insight and analysis you won't get anywhere else.
We will never be the media mob.
And stay on top of the U.S. markets with Fox Business. Watch your favorite shows live or get them on demand. Download the Fox News International app now from the Apple or Google Play stores. Also available on Amazon Fire.
So if you want growth, opportunity, and prosperity, just cut tax rates across the board. Then watch a rising tide lift all boats. Let's not make this any harder than it needs.
It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.